I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Today it's Midday on Education. A panel of three Baltimore City public school teachers discuss what's going on in their classrooms and the challenges and joys of a profession that is demanding and highly rewarding. Conversations about education in Baltimore City are often framed by stories of failing infrastructure, declining enrollment, layoffs, and budget cuts. Today, we hear the perspective of people who have devoted their lives to teaching for an on-the-ground, in-the-classroom perspective on what's wrong and what's right about our city schools. Karen Ginyard from the Mount Washington School, Robert Marinelli from Baltimore Polytechnic Institute, and Tavon McGee from City Springs Elementary Middle School join me to talk about educating our kids when Midday starts right after the news. And good afternoon. Welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Today, we're going to talk about education in Baltimore City. It's a topic we take up pretty frequently here on our show. Dr. Sonia Santelises, the CEO of the City Schools, has been a guest on our program several times, as were her predecessors. We've talked about test scores with reporters and scholars. We've talked about education policy with political leaders at the state and local level. Last week, we spent an hour with Britt Kerwin, the chair of the Kerwin Commission, which is charged with reimagining the funding formula for schools in Baltimore and throughout the state. So we hear a lot about teachers, but it's not as often that we hear from teachers. Well, today on Midday, we aim to fix that. My guests are three teachers in the city school system who teach at the elementary, middle school, and high school levels. Karen Ginyard teaches the third grade at the Mount Washington School, a public K through 8 school. Tavon McGee teaches sixth grade math at City Springs Elementary Middle School on the city's east side. That's one of five conversion charter schools. It's part of the Baltimore Curriculum Project. And Robert Marinelli teaches science and chairs the science department at Baltimore Polytechnic Institute, known for generations as Poly High School. It's on Cold Spring Lane in North Baltimore. Poly is a science, math, and engineering magnet school. Welcome to you all. Thank you so much for coming in. Appreciate
Thank you.
It.
Thank you, Tom.
And you know, we say this a lot to service men and women and law enforcement people, but I want to say it to you. Thank you for your service. Teaching is not just a job. It is a calling, mm-hmm. and you've all accepted that call, and we are grateful. And we'd love to hear from other teachers as well, listeners. So as you prepare for the start of school next month, what's on your mind? What are your aspirations for the coming school year? What do people who are not teachers need to know about your profession? You can join us here on Midday at 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org, to drop us a tweet at @MiddayWYPR. And we are also streaming on the WYPR Facebook page, so you can catch us there as well. So let me just sort of go down the line here at the table, and starting with you, Karen Ginyard, tell us how long you've been teaching at Mount Washington, and a little bit about your background as an educator.
I've been teaching for 9 years, and I've been at the Mount Washington School. I'll be going into my fifth year. What was your other question? I forgot already.
Wait, and had you taught? So you've been taught for 9 years.
Yes.
Did you do other? Were you in other professions before that?
This is my second career.
Mm-hmm.
So prior to teaching, I was working in the financial services industry for 13 years, and I took a year and a half off to stay home with my children, and then I went back to the financial services industry as a contractor. And when the market tanked, that was about 2008, when mm-hmm. the market went down, so did my job. So I needed to get another job, and Baltimore City was looking for substitute teachers, and so that's how I started. My family, I'm from a family of teachers and retired administrators, so I often tell people that it must have been in my blood.
Yeah, clearly.
To teach, and I haven't looked back since.
And were you certified or whatever? Did you have the proper certification you needed at that time?
No. So I went through an alternative certification program, the Baltimore City Teaching Residency Program, and from there, that's where I got my certification and went into the classroom and here I am.
And here you are. And yes. So this is a career that you're obviously sticking with this time around.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Good for you. And Bobby Marinelli, you've been in the game for a while, huh?
Just a few years, yeah. this is year 23 coming up for me. And like Karen, this is a second career for me. I was a professional sailor. I made sails for sailboats and raced sailboats around the world and realized that there was not much money to be made in that. So I gave it up and I got into public education. So we're really not going to discuss my decision-making skills.
But you're not teaching decision-making, right?
No, I'm not. But I went back to school and got my degrees and got certified right away. And I student taught at Poly, and a position opened up the year that I finished up. And the position was offered to me. I've been there ever since.
So you've been only at Poly. You've never taught any other place than Poly.
Right? While I was an undergrad, I was teaching some labs at a community college nearby, but it wasn't a full-time gig. Mm-hmm. I was hired by Baltimore City to teach at Poly, and like I said, 22 years later, I'm still there.
Yeah, very, very lucky. And Tavon McGee, you're relatively new to the game, huh?
Yes and no. Well, I started in education back in 2009, after moving back here to Baltimore, after moving and living in several different states. I worked prior to coming to Baltimore. I worked in clinical auditing field as a pre-bill auditor for a home healthcare company. And I moved back to Baltimore and with the intentions of pursuing a field that would utilize my degree in business management and or criminal justice. I was introduced to the school system by way of being a volunteer. And I never had any aspirations of teaching or coaching or doing anything with the school system. And I spent one day at the school as a volunteer, and I fell in love with it. And I've never looked back. Once I decided that this is the route that I was going to take, I then went on to receive the necessary education, went on and got my degrees, and haven't looked back since. I've been doing it now for coming up on 10 years, and I'll be starting year 8 at City Springs.
Oh, of course. For some reason, I was under the impression that this was like your second or third year teaching,
so
I'm misinformed about that. Yeah, good, okay. Good. So 10 years. And middle school, did you choose middle school? You're teaching sixth grade, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a choice that you had, or is that where the job was, or how did you come to be in the sixth grade classroom?
Well, I like to look at it as if I like to want to believe that I choose where I'm going to go, and I wouldn't say that was the job that was open, because I would have had options to go other places, but where I needed to be was in the middle school field. Ideally, when I think about teaching and working with students, first I want to be with the high school kids because they're older. And as the years went on, when I transitioned from high school to middle school, I saw that there was a heavy need in the middle school, because you get to lay the foundation for those young students that are going on to high school. And my passion stayed with the middle school students. And me moving into the math position, it's not my first rodeo with teaching math, but it's definitely something that I'm really, really enjoying. I'm enjoying the opportunity to work with the younger students, because I get to see them when they come back years later, just a few years later, when they move on and transition into high school. And now some even into college, they come back, and I get to see that the foundation that we laid at the middle school level, you know, is what led them to pursuing those further goals that they had set early on in life.
Tavon McGee teaches at City Springs Elementary Middle School. Karen Ginyard's here as well. She's a teacher at Mount Washington School, and Bobby Marinelli teaches and leads the science department at Baltimore Polytechnic Institute. We're talking about education here on Midday with three teachers who are actually in the classroom. Imagine that. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, to drop us a tweet @MiddayWYPR, and you can catch us on the WYPR Facebook page as well. I'm Tom Hall. So, Karen, in the 9 years you've been teaching, what's changed? What is different now? Is there anything much different? Are kids different now than they were 10 years ago? Is the system dramatically different? How do you think things have evolved in the time you've been in the field?
There are changes every year, and the children are different every year. Their challenges are different every year. Since I've been teaching, I've seen the curriculum change, the math curriculum change, the literacy curriculum change. When I started teaching, they were just starting to talk about Common Core, and now we're into Common Core for several years. So that's probably been the biggest change that I've seen with teaching. as far as the children, prior to Mount Washington, I was at another school, so I saw children from a different side of the city as opposed to the students at Mount Washington. So,
Where were you on the other, on the different
side? I was at Waverly Elementary Middle prior to coming to Mount Washington. So the students were different as well. Students are changing what's going, you know, a lot of them are bringing what they see at home and what they they're exposed to outside of school into the classroom. So for teachers, we are seeing that more in the classroom and having to deal with that as opposed to just teaching the subjects or the content. So we also have to balance that along with teaching as
Yeah. And Bobby Marinelli, you hear this a lot on the street. I've talked to a couple of friends who teach at City College or who used to teach at City College. One is retired. About the enormity of the job. I mean, it's not just teaching the subject matter, science, math, English, whatever it is. It's about, in many cases, doing what some people say the parents should be doing. What's your response to that, or what's your experience in that regard?
Oh, I've got to agree. Now, first of all, we refer to it as the other school.
City. Yeah, that's right. I apologize for that.
No worries.
That name crossing my lips in your presence.
It's a good-natured rivalry, but... It is tough. It is more than the curriculum. And when I first started teaching, I was focused on it was the science content in the curriculum that I was to deliver, and that was the focus of my job. And more, it's to be a dependable adult in some of these children's lives who they may not have a dependable adult. Consistency, demonstrating, you know, how to deal with adversity because, you know, every day there's some situation presented. So it is more, and I guess in some ways it's being a parent, but I know that the parents that I interact with, they care deeply about their children. Circumstances might prevent them from being as present, parent-teacher nights and back-to-school nights and things like that, but they care deeply about their children and they want the best for them.
And Tavon McGee, we hear from Dr. Santelises and others on North Avenue that one of the approaches that at least North Avenue hopes that the schools will embrace is this notion of the whole child, teaching the whole child. What does that mean for you, and what's the actual ramifications of that approach in your classroom?
Well, first, I wanted, this was just on my mind. Mr. Marinelli, he said that he's been teaching for just a few years, and I just wanted to point out that he was actually my high school teacher when I was at Poly. So I'm not that old, but it's just a few years.
That's terrific.
Yeah, so when I think about teaching the whole child, I'm not only delivering a lesson to this kid. I'm being his parent when he comes to school or she comes to school. I'm being his mentor, his coach, his guidance counselor. And I want to meet that child wherever he or she is so that I can walk them along and share my experiences with life and open doors to them that maybe they wouldn't have opened to them prior to coming into my classroom. I want to let them know that I'm going to tap into your mind. I want to tap into your soul and your heart. And in addition to that, we're going to learn this content, and we're going to learn this content deeply. So when I think about reaching the whole child, that embodies everything of being a person. So what comes into my classroom is a person. And any skill that I have, any viewpoint on life that I have that I can pass on to that child, that's what I'm doing. So I would say that for me as an educator, teaching the content falls low on my list because I want to be able to make sure that when we get to the content, I understand you understand me, and we're on this journey together.
Tapping into the soul, the mind, and the heart. That's terrific. Let's grab a phone call. This is Jacob. Jacob is in Harford County and teaches kindergarten. Jacob, welcome to Midday. Thanks for calling.
Hey, it's nice to hear from you. I'm a kindergarten teacher from Harford County, and one of the things that I see with my five-year-olds when they come in on that first day of school is so many of them come in already below grade level when they start off the year, and so we spend the rest of the year working with them to try and get them to where they need to be. Just so for any parents out there who have little babies up till 5 years old, I can't stress how important it is to work with them every day because their brains will never be as flexible as they will when they're little. So the best thing you can do for them is get that early education right from the start.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, Jacob, and break a leg this year up in Harford County. Karen Ginyard, you're nodding your head. Amen to that. Huh? I mean, so you're dealing with third grade, is it like 8 and 9 year olds?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We talk about universal pre-K. Baltimore City actually has a fairly vigorous pre-K system, in some regards, much more vigorous than other jurisdictions. But you see it by the time they show up to kindergarten, first and second grade in your school, huh?
Mm-hmm. We do. We don't have a pre-K program at the Mount Washington School, but even in my classroom, I can tell students who have been through pre-K or just started in kindergarten, even something as simple as cutting, you will see, and I will sometimes ask, did you go to pre-K or where did you, what did you learn? Things like that that sometimes...
That sort of motor skill thing. Yeah.
Yes, those things are important. They do have to cut, even drawing lines and things like that. Those things are extremely important. Unfortunately, a lot of times teachers are so bombarded with the curriculum and what they have to do within a certain time frame and testing and things like that, that maybe in those younger grades they can't get to that or they just don't have time for it. So that is where the parent at home, if your child is bored, give them some scissors, lines or draw lines or things like that. That is important. And we do see it in the, later in years where they can't do those things.
It catches up. Yeah. All right. Well, we've got lots more to talk about, and we will do so when we come back. Karen Ginyard teaches at the Mount Washington School. Tavon McGee teaches at City Springs Elementary Middle. Bobby Marinelli teaches and leads the science department at Baltimore Polytechnic Institute. More on Baltimore City Schools with our panel of teachers when we come back. 410-662-8780. If you'd like to weigh in, our email midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle @MiddayWYPR. If you want to follow me on Twitter, that's a swell idea, @TomHallWYPR. And you can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. Stay with us. And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, a conversation about desegregating schools in Chestertown in the 1950s and the 1960s. We'll talk about the rich history of African Americans on the Eastern Shore as the 5th annual Legacy Day celebrations take place in Chestertown. The 1954 Supreme Court decision in Brown versus Board of Education rendered the segregation of public schools unconstitutional, but in Chestertown, 13 more years of racial separation would pass before integration was enforced. My guest will be community organizer and Legacy Day chairperson Airlie Ringgold Johnson. Vanessa Isaacs Ringgold, who was among the first Black students to integrate Chestertown High School, and a local historian, Bill Leary. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick will review the new show at the Motor House here in Baltimore called Aida. That's all coming up tomorrow on Midday. If you're just joining us today, we're talking about life in the classrooms of Baltimore City Public Schools with a panel of teachers who spend 9 months a year in those classrooms. Bobby Marinelli is the head of the science department at Baltimore Polytechnic Institute. Karen Ginyard teaches at the Mount Washington School. Tavon McGee is on the faculty of City Springs Elementary Middle in East Baltimore. You are welcome to join our conversation at 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org to drop us a tweet @MiddayWYPR, and you can catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. Bobby Marinelli, we hear also a lot that teachers are challenged by all of this administrivia that they've got to do. There's all of these administration record keeping and data collecting and stuff that is doesn't have anything to do with the teaching of science in your case. Put those administrative duties in perspective for us. Of course, now you are the chair of a department, so you've got those kinds of
additional responsibility.
You got to run the railroad. But is it a problem for teachers? Are they asked to do too much stuff outside of curriculum?
I don't know that they're asked to do too much, but I'm not sure that they're given the support that they need to do what they're asked to do. Many times these initiatives come down from on high and with very little guidance as to how to do them. And you find out you did it wrong, you've implemented something improperly, you haven't set up whatever it is. So it can seem quite onerous that, you know, every 2 years something new, the flavor changes, and we've got this new thing is going to fix it for us. And it just, before we even have a chance to really roll it out and see if it does work well, we're on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was counting up when we were waiting to go on air. I was counting up. I've been under 9 CEOs and or superintendents in my 22 years. And then you've got, you know, we switched from an education model to what many refer to as a business model, and that there's always something new coming along. And I'm not sure that we ever really give them the time to see if they are effective or not.
Yeah, interesting. And Tavon McGee, City Springs is part of the Baltimore Curriculum Project. That's a sort of umbrella organization that runs 5 different schools.
Yes.
Are you, because of that, because it's what's called a conversion charter school,
mm-hmm.
Which means that you're zoned. I mean, the kids in your neighborhood can go to your school. There's no lottery or anything,
mm-hmm.
right? But because you have the BCP infrastructure, does that shield you all in your building from some of this administrative stuff that North Avenue asks of teachers system-wide?
Well, I would say that having BCP in place, it makes things a lot easier. Our teachers are expected and asked, there are a lot of things asked of our teachers. And I just believe that, you know, if you stay on top of it and don't get backed up, even though sometimes it may be a lot or sometimes even too much, if you stay on top of it, you can kind of keep a handle on it a little bit more. Our Baltimore Curriculum Project, the operator, we have a lot of resources available for our teachers and support staff. And with that in place, I would say that we face some of the same challenges that other teachers from throughout the district face with having a lot of paperwork and expectations for data collection and everything. But we may have just a few more support systems in place, being though that we have the Baltimore Curriculum Project.
Let's go back to the phones. Bill, you're calling from Owings Mills. Welcome to Midday with our panel of teachers. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi. I heard your program and thought I could call in since I maybe could contribute something to your panel as well as just any other teachers, whatever, listening.
Yeah, and what's that?
Well, I started in June of 1968 and came into the teaching system sort of like your other teacher of the alternative system, and instead of going to Vietnam, I taught school at Pimlico Junior High School, and then I continued on to Harlem Park. But in the meantime, I was blessed to be able to form Living Classrooms in 86, Odyssey of Mind, and a lot of outsourcing type programs that are available, as well as bringing speakers in that were in the Baltimore City area that could encourage the students at large or directly in the classrooms. And then I ended up getting a master's in special education, which allowed me to expand my abilities. But the teachers have the same problem as we had at the beginning, which is classroom discipline as well as classroom attention, as well as the fact that what we're teaching the students needs to be understood by them at a level they could understand.
All right. Well, thanks for that call, Bill. So Bill was, Karen Gignard, you know, on the bottom floor, evidently, in places like over on Caroline Street, the Living Classrooms. Yeah. When it comes to mentoring young teachers, I mean, when you started in the teaching profession, you mentioned you started as a substitute and then you got your certification and then you're on your own. But when the new teachers come to Mount Washington, the folks who are fresh out of college or 1 or 2 years out, do you think the system gives them ample training and ample, before they are in the classroom, does the system help them out to get to where they need to be?
Well, the system now has a mentor-teacher program that was not in place when I started, and I wish I had. So now most schools have a site-based mentor, which is a teacher who may be in the classroom or may not be in the classroom, who is there to support that new teacher. They meet with that teacher often and help them with planning or classroom management, whatever that teacher needs. to give them that support that they need to be successful in the classroom. They have partnered with a program, the New Teacher Zone, which also gives those mentors support as well. And it's a 3-year program. So from their first year through their third year, these teachers have someone there to support them in the classroom.
And do the mentor teachers also teach themselves? Do they have their own classes?
Some schools do. At our school, our mentor teacher is in the classroom and has their own classroom. But at other schools, many of them are out of the classroom.
Mm-hmm. And Bobby Marinelli, you're in charge of recruiting and hiring teachers for the science department at Poly. How hard is it in this day and age to get people interested in the teaching profession?
Well, with science being an area of critical need, like math, it's very difficult to attract people to the profession. They can certainly make more money outside of teaching, and many do so. I do want to really quickly say that the BCTR program that Karen went through has done an amazing job. We've recruited a lot of people from BCTR to Poly.
And BCTR is Baltimore City Teacher Residency.
Okay. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a marvelous job supporting. And like Mount Washington, we have two teachers at Poly who are dedicated to the teacher mentor program. In addition to those two teachers who work with the new hires, we also have people within their content area to mentor them. So we try to throw as much support as possible, because often we'll see somebody come in, they'll do 1 or 2 years, and then they're off to another profession or maybe off to another district where they can make more money. So hiring in science has been very difficult, and it's especially in the physical sciences.
Mm-hmm.
Physics, every high school is going to have to offer physics. Baltimore City has decided they're going with a model that requires that students pass biology, chemistry, and physics. That's not the current model, but they're working toward that. And last year, there were 27 certified physics teachers in Baltimore City. 6 of them taught at Poly.
Wow.
So you can see that there's going to be a real shortage. I have...
Is that physics mandate coming from the city? Is it coming from the state?
A little of both. As I understand it, the state said that, currently it was you had to pass biology and 2 lab sciences to get a Maryland State diploma, those 3 plus your other credits. The state offered to each jurisdiction to choose whether they went to a life science, earth science, physical science sequence, or a biology, chemistry, physics. And Baltimore City has chosen the latter. So we're going to have kids taking biology and chemistry and physics sequentially in high school, and they have to pass those for a Maryland State diploma. And it is an increase in rigor, because there were ways to get around passing chemistry and physics prior. So we're going to have a hard time making sure that we have experts in their field, qualified teachers to teach these content areas.
Mm-hmm. And Tavon McGee, we hear about STEM, science, technology, engineering, math. You're a math teacher.
Mm-hmm.
You're also an African-American male.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a shortage of folks, of men, black men teachers, and not only in this jurisdiction, in this system, but in systems nationwide. What would be your suggestion for recruiting more men of color into the profession that you've chosen?
That's a good question. Well, I think it would originally start with getting the men that are going to college, the young men that are going to college and that are currently in college, to understand that there's a need and you can change what's happening in the school system amongst your African-American young males and females. And when that connection can be made, I think then we'll start seeing some change. We have a lot of mentoring programs and programs where black men are guiding and spending 1 or 2 hours a day or a week with our African Americans and mentoring them through daily life. But I think if some of those men would step up and consider the opportunity of being a career changer so that you can make a difference by the masses in the classroom or in the school system, we will see change then. Sometimes you get people who shy away from being in education because of the pay. But like you said, when we first opened up, it's not something that you do for the money. You do it for the passion and the love of making a difference and passing your information and your knowledge on. So it's definitely a need for more African-American men in the school system, not especially here in Baltimore City when compared to the rest of the state. And I say Baltimore City because we have 80% of our student population African-Americans.
Sure.
And it's important for those students to see people that look like them doing it, because in most cases, not 100% of the time, you can make a better connection, especially for those kids who aren't excited about learning. When I think about a school like Poly, you know, I went to Poly and I didn't have many African-American teachers there. I had some, and they were equally important to me as those white teachers that I had, because I understood that there's a connection between, you know, getting the information from these teachers, whether they were white or black. And I was at Poly with a different mindset. But what about those sixth graders who don't have that mindset, or that those ninth graders that aren't at a school that is rigorous and have such high expectations as a Poly? Then you use those African-American males primarily to make that connection for those young students.
Tavon McGee, Bobby Marinelli, and Karen Ginyard join me here. We're talking about education in Baltimore City Public Schools. They are all teachers at the elementary, middle, and high school levels. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Our number is 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle @MiddayWYPR. And you can catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. Let's go to the phones. Dan in Woodstock, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for giving me a chance to speak. I'm very appreciative of the fact that you actually have a panel of people who do the teaching, as opposed to just executives who don't have the hands-on experience. The reason I'm calling is my significant other is a very experienced teacher, about retirement age, and right now she's working as a substitute teacher with younger kids, about from first to say fifth grade, and in Baltimore County. And she has a perspective that kids have changed in extent, how much they concentrate and how much discipline they have to finish assignments and to focus on the teacher and what's being taught. And she says, from her perspective, that it was a mistake that Baltimore County, I don't know if it's also true, the city, issued digital devices, I don't know exactly sure which kind, to all the kids. And she says that every time she turns around, they're looking at their digital devices, and they're not really interested. It seems to undermine the spirit of wanting to pay attention, wanting to learn.
Right. Well, I appreciate you bringing up this issue of.
I wanted to ask your panel: do they think it was a good idea or not that that digital devices were
okay? Well, thanks for that call. So, Karen Ginyard, even as young as third grade, do your kids bring phones to school?
They do, and they put them away. They are not allowed to use them in the classroom, not at that level. I do have a daughter who's in the sixth grade, and they do have their phones out if they're doing some type of research or looking up or things like that. And other than that, they turn their phones off. So it just really depends on the classroom, the grade level, and the expectations of the teacher.
Mm-hmm. And Bobby Marinelli, in terms of laptops, tablets, are they encouraged, discouraged, required at Poly?
They're not required. It's not that we encourage them. We allow them. But like anything else, these electronics are tools. And if they're used properly, they can be a wonderful asset to a child's education. Unfortunately, the difference between use and abuse, or for lack of a better term, abuse, where, you know, social media creeps in and the texting and things like that that distract and take them away from the lesson, that is an ongoing battle. Now, we do not allow the students to use their electronics during the school day unless this teacher has a lesson that involves it. The teachers use Quizlet. They're doing online research, something like that.
And they can do that on their phone.
They can do that on their phone.
And they may or may not be doing that or checking their Facebook page, right? Is that,
I believe,
how does that work?
My guess is most of our students are doing that, mm-hmm. because the teachers have designed a lesson that requires that they have done it, and you can't get away from it. So I believe that they are. I'm sure that some kids are sneaking around it. That's the nature of teenagers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, but I also think we have to realize that the electronics are here. And we need to figure out how we're going to tailor education to work with the electronics. They're ubiquitous. And I know when I first started teaching, there were no such thing as cell phones, and it was not an issue. And then very slowly they started creeping in. And I understand that, you know, parents are sending kids with cell phones for safety. They want to be able to reach their child in an emergency. And I understand that. So the idea of a blanket ban, it just doesn't work. So we've got to figure out a way to make it work within our school day.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about testing and the importance of testing. And we're getting some eye rolls here when I bring up that word. That's almost as bad as mentioning city in front of Bobby Marinelli. Bobby Marinelli is the chair of the science department at Baltimore Polytechnic Institute. Karen Ginyard teaches at Mount Washington. And Tavon McGee is on the faculty of City Springs Elementary Middle on the east side. We will have more with our panel of teachers. We'll try to take some more of your calls and comments. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayWIPR. We are also streaming on the WIPR Facebook page. I'm Tom Hall. Stick around. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, it's Midday on Education today. My guests are three teachers in the Baltimore City public school system. School starts in about 3 weeks, and when city schools are in the news, it's often because of a problem or a crisis. Well, today we are simply getting the perspectives of three educators whose understanding of the joys and challenges of working as a teacher are born of their experience in actual classrooms. Tavon McGee is a sixth grade math teacher at City Springs Elementary Middle School. Bobby Marinelli is the head of the science department at Baltimore Polytechnic Institute. And Karen Ginyard is a third grade teacher at the Mount Washington School. Our phone number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org, to drop us a tweet @MiddayWIPR. And you can catch us on the WIPR Facebook page. So let me start with you, Karen, and ask everybody to weigh in a little bit about testing. There is this narrative out there that kids are over-tested, that teachers are forced to teach to the test, and that there's a whole bunch of the rest of the curriculum that somehow gets ignored or gets shunted aside. What's your take in your classroom and with your experience?
Well, at the elementary level, the PARC testing doesn't begin until the third grade. So I am one of those years where students are first exposed to the PARC. We also have iReady for reading and math. And we use that at the beginning of the year to get a baseline for the students to understand where they are. And then quarterly, they will take those assessments, the iReady reading. And then the system has now introduced math, accompanied with ANET, that's aligned to these standards so that we can see where the children are as far as and how they're progressing. So that's the extent, of course, the classroom testing as well, but that's the extent of the mandated testing that we have. I don't believe in teaching to the test. I teach you what I believe you need to know to be successful, not only in the third grade, but beyond the third grade. So I do, of course, make sure that my teaching is based on the standards for that grade level and beyond that grade level, because we have students who are above grade level, so they need to go beyond those standards. So that is what I do, and just to make sure that they are prepared and ready for testing. When we get close to testing, we also teach strategies for testing, how to eliminate the answer that we know is not correct so that they are better with that, because students they're just not used to that type of testing. Also, all of the testing is on the computer, so they have to learn how to navigate.
You have a literacy with the machine itself.
Yes, yeah. I mean, even though our children are very tech savvy, they still have to know how to scroll down and go to the next screen or highlight or the compass, or sometimes, you know, depending on the math skill, they may have to use a tool, so they need to know that as well. So we have to take time out for that, you know, for our students, so that they're not so worried about the test and just move forward. So I just try to tell my students, don't worry about it. It's about, they're just testing you on what to see what you know. So mm-hmm. Don't focus on the test. Just show me what you know.
Yeah, and Bobby Marinelli, I've never talked to your principal, but when I do talk to some principals, they say, look, my job is on the line about the test scores of our school. And if the test scores, particularly in English and math, aren't very high, I got problems, you know. You're teaching science, you know, the person teaching geography, the person teaching music. These are things that are, you know, a little bit off the beaten path of what the state test scores, you know, the way they get tabulated. Are kids, in your estimation, tested too much? What do you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we've got in the springtime when the testing season begins, we have a testing coordinator who has put together a schedule when the kids can go into the computer lab. So first of all, the computer labs are unavailable for the rest of the school for roughly 2 months because they are used almost all day straight. You can't do them on laptops because the batteries won't last the time. Between the iReady and the PARC testing, and then students, don't forget, in high school, we're also dealing with PSATs and SATs, and then you've got midterms and finals that are content-based. These kids are suffering from test fatigue. In addition, and to piggyback on what Karen said, you know, we've got kids who come into a testing environment on the computer who are keyboard savvy. They can type quickly. And then we've got other kids who are hunt and peck typists like myself. I consider myself the fastest two-finger typist, but they're taking forever to type out an answer. And it's just, you know, I'm sure we can find where that breakdown has occurred. But if they're not familiar with the technology, if they're not conversant with the technology and navigating this, it puts them at a distinct disadvantage. It sends them a strong message. And I know that the kids are just, they're beaten up by this testing. A quick anecdote, I believe it was 2 years ago, we looked at the spring semester for the sophomores. They had 36 hours of testing between March 1st and finals. And none of that.
It's like a week.
36 hours. Yeah. Between iReady and PARC testing, none of that had any bearing whatsoever on their classroom grade. For instance, none of that was an assessment that could be used in calculation of their grade. But those 36 hours were time taken away from instruction. So in addition to those 36 hours...
For the stuff that did impact their grade.
Right. Yeah. So then the teachers had to come up with their own assessments and make them work in. So, you know, you think about how many dozens of hours these kids are being tested, whether it's a quiz, a test, an exam, a standardized test, whatever. It's amazing.
Yeah. And Tavon McGee, the question of expectations is one that I know educators wrestle with. I mean, mm-hmm. You said something that struck me earlier in the show about meeting the kids where they are. Mm-hmm. And then are you adjusting your expectations per kid, you know, on an individualized basis? And how does the testing that everybody's got to take, they all take the same test, mm-hmm. how does that play into that calculation?
In regards to expectations, they are always high. They're not set at different levels for different students. I can set the expectations high, and I'll expect every single kid to meet them. Now, if I need to make some tweaks along the way, that's exactly what I'll do, but I will still remain with high expectations. And in addition to what the other two teachers mentioned, me personally, I'm not going to fight against the test because we have to take them. All right. Now, my issue with the testing is, like you said, the expectations from the state level. And you look at Baltimore City, who have the lowest testing scores out of all of the school districts in the state of Maryland. Now, my issue is not that we have to take the test. My issue is that do you equip every student with the same tools that are required in order to be successful on the test? So we mentioned earlier about the student that comes to you already behind because they didn't receive a pre-K education or they didn't go to a Head Start program. Now, 3 years later, when that same student is in third grade taking the test for the first time, you had to play catch up.
Yeah.
No matter what, you had to play catch up. So my real issue is, are the students across the board equipped with the same tools? And when I think about the Baltimore City School District, you have so many teachers that are teaching in some of these core courses that are being tested that aren't highly qualified. You have teachers teaching in some of the testing subjects that are substitute teachers that don't have the education background, where the minimum requirement to be a substitute teacher is 30 credits, if I'm not mistaken, 30 college credits, that is. You have some of the new teachers coming in from the alternative programs. And for instance, BCTR, where they spend a few weeks throughout the summer, a month and a half maybe, and they might be going into a seventh grade ELA class or a ninth grade math class where those students will be tested. And my question is, are they equipped?
There can be a mismatch there.
Are they equipped with the same tools as their counterparts that are, let's just say, coming from Montgomery County School District?
Yeah. I got an email from Heather who says, I'm about to enter my 26th year teaching elementary art in the county public schools. I love the discussion today. I have two middle school sons who've made their way through the public schools without a single male teacher other than the occasional guy in phys ed. So how can schools attract and keep more male teachers in general? So we're not even just talking about male teachers of color, just male teachers in general. A couple of things about parents. Tiffany pings us on Facebook and says, I have twins who are starting sixth grade and a daughter who is starting high school this fall. What would you like parents to know that can best help you make our students be successful? Karen, what do you think?
Parents need to be educated about what's going on in their school. And just know what your child is going to be learning and stay in touch with that. Make sure that when you can, go out to those PTA meetings or PTO meetings, the school family council, and also develop a relationship with the teacher. When the teacher and the parents are working together, that is the best.
Good stuff happens.
Yes, that's the best foundation for that child.
Yeah, we have another caller on the line, Jill in Baltimore. Welcome to the program. I guess you want to talk about parents as well.
Yes, my question was, and we have the parent portal where parents can get online and see their children's attendance and their grades even day to day, and they can communicate with teachers by email about different issues. How much do you use that? Do you find parents use it? Is it a good thing?
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Jill. So, Bobby, this parent portal through North Avenue, right? Through the
correct
system.
It's an online grade book, and the parents can check their students' progress at any time, 24/7. It's only as good as the teacher using it in terms of uploading the grades. And to be perfectly honest, there are times when we get behind, but I think most of our teachers work diligently to keep that because it is immediate feedback to the parents so that they know where their child is at any time. And if I can jump back to your last question real quick, one thing that I would advise parents, and I am a parent myself, my son is a graduate of Poly, my daughter is going into her junior year. So I see this from both sides, and probably the best advice I could give a parent is teach their children to be able to deal with being uncomfortable in the educational setting. That education, it's not bad if education is uncomfortable and difficult and messy. It shouldn't be easy. We need to challenge our own beliefs. We need to expand. And they're going to be uncomfortable. And it's okay to be uncomfortable.
We're going to have to leave it there. We are out of time, but I am grateful, so grateful to all three of you for coming in, and enjoy your next week or so of freedom, right? Academic freedom before you head back a little bit before the students show up right after Labor Day. By the way, real quick, Tavon, does it matter that schools are starting after Labor Day now instead of the week before? I got to give you 10 seconds on
that. Real quick, I'm going to say no, because I actually start next Tuesday on the 21st and our students come back on the 28th.
Oh, so they come back before Labor Day.
Absolutely.
All right, I promise I won't tell the governor. All right, thank you very much. Karen Ginyard is a third grade teacher at Mount Washington School. Tavon McGee is a sixth grade math instructor at City Springs Elementary Middle School. Bobby Marinelli heads the science department at Baltimore Polytechnic Institute. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, a conversation about the Chestertown Legacy Day celebrations taking place this weekend. This year's theme focuses on the desegregation of schools in Chestertown. We'll talk about the upcoming festival and reflect on the early days of integration with Arlie Ringgold Johnson, Vanessa Isaacs Ringgold, who was one of the first black students to integrate Chestertown High School, and historian Bill Leary. That's coming up tomorrow, plus a review from our theater critic, Jay Wynn Russick. Lunch for our midday guests today was provided by Dangerously Delicious Pies. They've got locations at 2839 O'Donnell Street in the Square in Canton and at 810 West 36th Street over in Hamden. Their menu includes a large variety of homemade sweet and savory pies and quiches. More information on the web at dangerouspiesbalt.com. Future Cities on the way after news at the top of the hour. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.